Hello and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rap Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires that we call the internets is Joe, Crazy Writer. How you doing today, Joe?
I always start the day with good intentions, but then I get out of bed. That's usually where it all goes wrong.
I find that waking up is usually where things fall apart for me.
Yeah. But this podcast ain't going to record itself.
No, it's not. And we got a new previews. We had free comic book day. And all six of us in a truck.
I think because the previews is such a long freaking show anyways. And it's interactive. We'll talk about a little bit about free comic book day. But that just means next week. Maybe that'll be our free comic book day review. And what do we want to do? Pick four or five out of our box old free comic book day stuff and do a review?
Sure.
So as you know, we go to Tim up in Granite City and he puts together a box for us and costs it out, which is great. And this year it was about $20 a box.
I honestly do not know.
I think that's what it was, because while you guys were outside, we were finishing up, and I did not get the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle toy exclusive that he ordered for me, because Diamond, in their infinite wisdom, did not let him get one. Although I see them all over eBay, and the whole point of buying it from Tim was to support my local friendly comic book shop. I don't really want it, but who knows, years from now, I might go, hey, remember that turtle thing I didn't pick up? It's worth hundreds of thousands of dollars. I did not see any as we toured, but then again, that's not what this show is about. This is our preview show. It was a busy last couple of weeks. Like, all this stuff is coming down, and we only got one day a week to do a podcast.
Yeah, I know. And, well, the next previews we do. No, it'll be the one after that. I was going to say, the next previews we do, Marvel will be off on their own and DC will be off on their own. But no, it's the one after that where Marvel is off on their own.
Tim had some pretty pointed things to say about that. But again, we'll talk about that next week or maybe at Freaking. I don't know. We'll figure it out.
We'll do, folks, something.
Grab your previews. This is number 395, August 2021. If you are lucky enough, you will have your DC Connect number 15 with you and your Marvel's free previews number 14. So that's your textbook and your supplements. Okay, so pause this here podcast, pick them up, and when you come back, you unpause and we will continue. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Listeners, are you ready? Joe, are you ready?
I'm never ready, but that never, never stops me from picking up the previews and going through it. I actually went outside and enjoyed part of the day today as I went through the previews catalog, because it's going to get hot and muggy here again pretty soon. But we had some pretty nice temps. We had a pretty good weekend. No excuses, right?
Well, hopefully next weekend it will be nice, because today I worked till about a half hour before we started.
Yeah. So we're already behind. See? Oh, man, we got to get rolling.
And, you know, the group home asked me if I would come in tonight, and I said no.
You didn't laugh at them derisively, did you?
No, I told them that the office job had already grabbed me until 7 because they wanted me to work till 8.
They called dibs. So here's where I usually sit back and I let Corey see. I basically pick up my previews. I bump right into it. Corey lovingly caresses it and reads every word on the cover, the back cover, and the spine. So was there anything of those three areas, Corey, that's jumped out at you?
Well, first we've got on the flip cover where the toys are, they advertise Gunslinger Spawn. And normally I wouldn't point that out, except the what's the new Spawn book, Joe? that started up this month?
It was King Spawn started up, and it all came out of the, I don't know what it was called, Spawn Universe or something.
Did you hear Todd McFarlane announced what his initial orders are?
I did not.
500,000 copies.
Wow. That's pretty solid. I don't recall if he had any funky incentives with it. I know he had multiple covers, but I didn't know if he had like buy 3,000 and get this one, which I personally will take to the crapper.
Nope. Not only that, but this is a new trend that I don't much care for. It's a 24-page comic and not a 36-page comic.
And basically, I'm sorry, it starts out of Spawn Universe number one. So if you are hell-bent on collecting this, Spawn Universe number one is probably where all these characters first appeared. I point that out because that seems to be a really crazy thing going on in our little side of the industry now, because everybody's looking for first appearances. Tim even had him on the wall at Granite City, which I thought was kind of a brilliant thing to do, you know. So the other side, of course, was they're returning to the Star Trek Mirror Universe with the Mirror War. And
on the spine is a Green Goblin figure.
Yeah, a bust. So, but that's not what we're here to talk about.
Also, this is previews 395.
Heading down to 400. Will it be a double size must have collector item?
Will it even come out?
I hope it's not.
Because, one of the shops we stop at said, yep, Diamond's about to go under.
Oh, yeah. Diamond's always going under. Let's see. Oh, come to think of it, let's start with Image, since we were giving him kind of a buildup. I am actually going to jump on board for Gunslinger Spawn. I will give it a shot for the first couple universes. Issues, I should say. I got to go pick up a Spawn Universe number one because I didn't buy it. And this is the second new monthly title spinning out of the Spawn Universe. Will it continue? Will it die? Will it go beyond the $5.99 for 48 pages? I don't know. But the pages they gave that kind of showed off were intriguing enough. And I kind of have a soft spot lately for Western comics, so I thought I'd give it a try. Todd McFarlane and Alice Cott are writing it. Brett Booth, Philip Tan, Kevin Keane are drawing it. There's two covers, Brett Booth and a Todd McFarlane. So I would imagine we will be revisiting that in the future as I read it and tell you, yes, this is worth reading, or wait for the trade. Or take it off your list. Forget about it. Walk away slowly.
Joe, go back page to page 40.
40? Oh, I should have guessed. Ed Brubaker.
Yep, Ed Brubaker. Friday book one, The First Day of Christmas. This is a trade paperback. Friday Fitzhugh spent her childhood solving crimes and digging up occult secrets with her best friend, Lancelot Jones, the smartest boy in the world. But that one is in the past. Now they're in college, starting a new life on her own, or so she thought. When Friday comes back home for the holidays, she's immediately pulled back into Lance's orbit and finds that something very strange and dangerous is happening in their little New England town. This is a young adult book. It is... The pitch is Encyclopedia Brown meets H.P. Lovecraft. And this won an Eisner Award. And it says, oh, it collects Friday 1 through 3. And you're saying, well, I don't remember Friday 1 through 3. That's because that was an online comic.
Very sneaky, Ed.
So I'm looking forward to this one. Joe?
On page 48, Hell Cop, number one. Brian Haberlin, artists Brian and looks like Gerard Van Dyke. Welcome to Hell. They advertise this as a horror science fiction. This is AC's series premiere. A bunch of variant covers, including some 1 in 10, 1 in 50s, if you can find them. When mankind first broke through the walls between dimensions, nothing could have prepared them for what they would find in known reality plane. 1301-A. It was absolute hell, literally. A covert security force was quickly assembled to patrol the helpline and ensure that none of the nastier denizens made their way Earthside. They were done the pan-dimensional security cops, the hell cops. And of course, you know someone's going to escape. Across from it, for those of you who dig your comics in 3D, and whom am I to judge, because half the time movies come out in regular in 3D, there you go. Your chance to pick it up in with a 3D version of Hell Cop number one. And of course, it comes with bagged with glasses. So what else you need?
I need you to go to page 64.
Oh, how about that? That's one I was going to go to as well.
Paper Girls, The Complete Story. This was a book that we reviewed way back when the first issue came out.
Yes. And I loved it. I actually sold my copies on the eBays when I read the first, I don't know how far I went, maybe issue 10. And then I decided, you know what? This is good. I'm going to buy it in book form, which I have not done. So here
and
we
now
go.
You can.
Yep, full color.
Brian K. Vaughan and Chip Chang. This is issues 1 through 30, the entire series of Paper Girls. Four 12-year-old newspaper delivery girls from the year 1988 uncover the most important story of all time. Suburban drama and otherworldly mysteries combined in this critically acclaimed series about nostalgia, first jobs, and the last days of childhood. They don't point out that this is a time travel story.
Spoilers! I haven't read it yet.
Joe, that was in the first issue that we reviewed.
Yeah, but that was a long, long time ago.
Also, there is a box set for Saga on the next page.
Yep.
I have the compendium, but this is the first 9 trade paperbacks of Saga, one of the best comics being printed, which is coming back very, very soon.
See, I may pick this. I haven't decided on this one because I've got issues like 1 and 2 of the trades, and I figure I would just pick these up slowly. I do like compendiums, though, after reading Invincible, so I may jump to that. I do like me an original graphic novel, so take a look back on page 60. Fine Print Volume 1. I am not going to attempt to pronounce that name. However, how do you deal with a broken heart, junk food, excessive drinking, dubious contracts with the ancient gods? Well, of course, for Lauren Thomas, the queen of bad decisions, the answer is always the worst possible choice. So when she finds herself with the rare opportunity to have her broken heart patched by the highest rated god of desire, what could possibly go wrong? A couple pages next to it with very, very small writing. And of course, I enjoyed the art enough where I actually took out the old spectacles and read through it. So I've actually got another work, Sunstone, which I have yet to read, but I think I'll give this one a shot. After that, that was it for Image. Corey, and you got anything else new or interesting?
Nope, that was it for me as well. The stuff that they are pushing, first off, the Invincible compendiums had sold out, so those have all gone back to press. A bunch of the Spawn Origins books are coming back into print, but you know, they do a 2-page spread press pushing stuff every month, and usually they give the retailers a bit of a discount, so they might pass that on to you. Yeah. And even if
like
they don't, they might have it there.
You know, and I would even like to see this is the type of thing that if I had the ability in it when I had a retail store, that I would, you know, especially with Halloween coming up, this is perfect for Halloween. You know, Modern Terrors. We're talking page 74, 75 here for those of you playing along. And, you know, just stack these books, make a display, make your own little end cap or something. And like it says, retailers, see ordering forms for details. There must be some incentive or definitely an extra discount or two. So,
and they're all horror graphic novels. Out of the ones on the page, the ones I would point out as my favorites are Black Magic, which is about a cop who is also a witch. And The Nameless by Grant Morrison.
Yeah, and I enjoyed Exosisters. No idea if it's ever coming back. but there's two volumes available that I enjoyed a lot. So, Corey, and I got some reading to do because we're way behind.
Oh, and Stillwater by Chuck Zdansky. That one I mentioned about, I think I reviewed it the last time we did reviews.
Boy, and Witches, that's an older one. I know way back when I reviewed that one. So, I think I did. I don't remember. Oh, well. Next up, Dark Horse.
Dark Horse.
I only have one thing I'll point out other than the normal stuff I'm ordering. If you're on page 113, Mobius Library, Dr. Mobius and Mr. Gurr. I love Mobius. And this one here has some, I can't pronounce the name there, Newman Sadul's landmark interviews with Jean Mobius Grad. And apparently these were book-length conversations. So this is, would this be, oh, this is a trade paperback. I guess underneath it, you've got more of the actual library, volume one, volume two. But this is actually a good piece to go with. Unless, of course, you happen to have the original 14-hour interviews that, oh, well. That's pretty much the only new thing from Dark Horse. Anything else you got, Corey? Other than maybe Grendel's Devil's Odyssey hardcover on the very next page.
That's what I was going to point out. There are two things on page 114. First is the EC Archives Crime Illustrated. This is another of the Pictofiction books, which were after all the comics died. Mad was starting to make money, so William Gaines thought, well, maybe I can move my other comics to magazine form. Except he used a really strange format, where it was prose stories, but they were laid out like a comic book where there would be four panels. It would be text and then a picture and then text and then a picture and then text and a picture. They did not last. Only two issues were ever printed, but the third, which was they actually printed the third. They printed 200 copies, stapled them themselves, because they ran out of money while printing it. So they had 200, they had everything for 200 copies, stapled them, gave them away to people who worked in the office and some of the fans back then. Then Devil's Odyssey, which is the new Grendel miniseries, written and drawn by Matt Wagner. There will be another Grendel miniseries after this one. So Matt Wagner is continuing Grendel, which makes me very, very happy. And that is it for Dark Horse. Not much from them this month.
Nope. IDW, the only thing I want to point out, if you're a My Little Pony fan, on page 133, there is a number one, My Little Pony Generations. I would imagine there will be three covers as well as a retailer incentive. So jump on board, or if you have a fan of My Little Pony, this is your chance to jump on board. Otherwise, nothing else for me from IDW.
I didn't have anything either. The new Star Trek series that we pointed out, I buy those as trades.
Yeah. All right. Now for Dynamite.
What about DC?
Oh, you want to? Okay, we can bump to DC because now that we got a book. I don't mind bumping to DC. And again, grab your supplement. And I can actually do something which I haven't done in ages. Go to page 22.
What?
I know. Isn't this great? Wonder Woman Historia, the Amazons. I mean, not only am I ordering something, but I'm also, I can actually, instead of just going alphabetized, we can actually read along with it. The wait is over. The entire story of the Amazons can finally be told. Millennia ago, Queen Hera and the goddesses of the Olympian pantheon grew greatly dissatisfied with their male counterparts, and far from their sight, they put a plan into action. A new society was born, one never before seen on Earth, capable of wondrous and terrible things. But their existence could not stay secret for long. This is a three-issue Black Label $7.99 book with pencils and ink by Phil Jimenez, story by Kelly Sue DeConnick, Again, some beautiful art on page 23 right across from it. And as it's a mini series, I think I will go with it. I do have to say, you know, going through this, I noticed like the first half of the book was all Batman. And then there was a big chunk of the book that was all Wonder Woman. And then all the other stuff at the end. So I'm not keen on the layout, but I do like it better than nothing at all. Corey, what's got on your brain?
First thing I'm going to point out is on page 12, Batman, the Long Halloween Special, which is a one-shot by Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale. 25 years ago, you thought you knew the whole story of Batman, the Long Halloween. Now legendary creators Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale return to Gotham City to return to reveal no secret remains buried forever. So this is a tie-in to the Long Halloween, which means that all those books that have the Long Halloween in it, after now when they print it, they'll add this story. Yep. So you can buy a new version of those books when they add this to it, or just buy this.
And it glue is in the prestige the format. Crate. Yep. On page 17, a beginning of a 12-issue series. I'm pointing it out because it sounds really cool, but I will probably wait for the inevitable trade and or hardcover. Human Target. Tom King, pencils and inks by Greg Smallwood. Christopher Chance has made a living out of being a human target. Hey, that's the name of the book. A man hired to disguise himself as a client to invite... Wait a minute. A man hired to disguise himself as his client to invite would-be assassins to attempt his murder. Get it? Human target. He's had a remarkable career until his latest case protecting Lex Luthor went sideways. An assassination attempt Chance didn't see coming leaves him vulnerable and left trying to solve his own murder. He has 12 days and 12 issues to discover just who in the DC universe hated Luthor enough to want him dead. So whereas Long Halloween, you think, is DC universe, or is it you think that could be anywhere?
I've given up.
Okay, but the other one's Black Label, so that doesn't mean necessary. This one actually says it's in the DCU. So I'm real excited to see what Tom's going to do with this and Greg. But again, I'm going to wait for the full version, not the first six issues or the last six. I just want one big book. And I'm tempted to do that across the other side. There's a DC versus Vampires. I'll wait for that in a big book and or I'm in a bus.
On page 20, the Wonder Woman 80th Anniversary 100-page Super Spectacular. I like these 100-page anniversaries, even though 80th anniversary, huh? What? But they're doing a lot of these 100-pagers where they have a whole bunch of creators doing stuff and a cover for each of the decades.
I know.
Although, here's the thing I find strange.
I'm kind of game for the Bruce Timm cover. I kind of like that. I think that's across on page 21 there.
Yep, I do like that one. I'm amazed they didn't get Brian Boland, who drew covers for Wonder Woman for like almost a decade.
Oh, yeah. Beautiful covers.
But I like those. I like those 100-page anthology books. I'm also going to point out, I'm buying this as a trade, but out of all the Joe Hill books, the one I really enjoyed the most was Basket Full of Heads. Other people must have as well, because that's the one getting a sequel with Refrigerator Full of Heads. New creative team, however.
Yeah.
Crime novelist Rio Yewers joins forces with artist Tom Fowler to unlock a gonzo grindhouse expression on the lore of the original Basket Full of Heads. The thing about Basket Full of Heads is there was this enchanted axe, and if someone got their head cut off with it, they didn't die. So they had a mist. It was written by Joe Hill, who is Stephen King's kid, who changed his name so he could create his own career. And then once it got out that it was Stephen King's kid, his books started selling anyway. So there you go.
Yep, that one I have on the list too. Again, I'm not sure how I'll do this. Probably as a trade, because they're fun to reread. Anything in the books? Should we head to back into the book section?
We could head back into the book section, but boy,
I mean, unless
is that
you have something
thin.
Else in the comics.
I did not, but boy, is this thin.
Yeah. Yeah, very thin, very, very small print. I'm going to have to get my spectacles out or my magnifying glass, which I have right behind me.
Now, Superman and the Authority, the first issue just came out a couple of weeks ago, but they're soliciting for the trade.
Yep.
So it's Grant Morrison and Miguel Janin, artist I don't know. And I guess it's set in the future or another Earth or something. But yeah. Superman is getting older, so he recruits the Authority to help him basically patrol the Earth. We also have the second Superman Batman omnibus, which reprints the second half of the Superman Batman series that started in the 2000s or the aughts or whatever we're going to call it. This one did not have stories by Jeff Loeb, but it does have stories by Michael Green, Mike Johnson, Joe Casey, Paul Levitz. Art is by Shane Davis and Raphael Albuquerque.
Well, I'll point. There was one omnibus that you may have skipped over on page 38. I'll point out Batman Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Omnibus, co-published DC IDW. I will say, first of all, I read the regular issues, enjoyed them. If you're a fan of either Batman, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, this is both series, I believe, because there was a original, and then I guess it collects all three Batman Mutant Ninja Turtle Batman crossovers. I missed one of them somewhere along the road. Now, we've talked in the past about how, you know, Marvel sees a price go up and they reprint it. I almost guarantee this one will not be reprinted because you're doing a licensed product from IDW through DC, Time Warner. This might be your only chance to get this. So if you're interested, this would be the one to pick up. The only other book I got on my list is the one I mentioned back, The Dreaming, Waking Hours. And like I said, I know they come out in miniseries, but I'm just going to wait because most of the Sandman series I love to reread, even though this isn't Neil Gaiman. I was enjoying The Dreaming before they decided to shut down the Gaiman universe, for lack of better words, and just do it. And again, this collects all 12. That's what I want. I want the whole story in one. And see, when Dream unleashes his latest nightmare, Ruin, he could not have expected that his creation would fall in love with the very first dreamer he met, sending him on a wild quest and drawing into his orbit both a fallen angel and a sorcerer with a startling connection to Dream himself. So that's pretty much it for me. I would love to buy the Wonder Woman Silver Age omnibus, but, you know, I'm good looking, not independently wealthy.
I was going to point out there is a Wonder Woman Silver Age omnibus, and I'd also like to point out that this was pretty much edited by Bob Haney, which meant the stories were batshit insane. Now, they reprinted these in the showcases a while back, and you've got the goofy villains like Egg Foo, a giant communist Chinese egg. But let me give you an example of how these stories were so fucking crazy. You had Wonder Woman, then they did stories about Wonder Girl, which is Wonder Woman as a teenage girl, Wonder Tot, which were stories about Wonder Woman as a baby, and then stories where they all teamed up to the point where people at DC didn't even know what the hell was going on with it, and they put Wonder Girl in the Teen Titans until somebody sent in a letter saying, wait, Wonder Girl is Wonder Woman as a teenager. Who's this Wonder Girl in the Teen Titans? So they had to create a new Wonder Girl, and then it was so convoluted that it didn't get all cleared up until George Perez and Marv Wolfman in the 80s did two stories who is Wonder Girl and who is Donna Troy. The character is still so messed up that I think she's been erased from reality like 4 or 5 times and brought back. And just think, the guy wrote stories that are still giving continuity headaches 60 years later.
But they all happen. Alan Moore said so. It's good enough for me.
Shall we go to Marvel?
Sure.
Now, you'll see on your cover of your Marvel's previews, first previews for an all-new era. And you would think it has to do with the Spider-Man 75, where they're going to have a new creative team. And now this is the first previews under Penguin Random House.
Yep. Which means nothing to you and me, but believe me, talking with Tim, it's a major headache for your retailer. Best thing you can do, go to your retailer and make a pull list. If you're just one of these guys who just shows up and picks off the shelf, but you order Amazing Spider-Man every time you visit, you just pick it off the shelf, help your guy out. Just tell him, hey, put it down for me. Get me the issues. Yeah, and right now they got what? Amazing Spider-Man 75. Is this the beginning or the end of the last storyline?
This is the beginning of the new storyline. As you'll see, when you go into the book, it is listed as Spider-Man Beyond.
Okay. And there's a bunch of good variants. I will probably go for the Pat Gleason variant, although Art Adams has one. And the same thing as you get into Spider-Man 76, 77, Pat Gleason, who's doing the art, also has his own variants. Very hot books. Especially on his own website where he sells the usually Virgin covers and he autographs them. And, you know, by the time I find out about it, because I'm part of the club, and by the time I get the email, they're already sold out. So, but here's your chance to get them. Last issue of Immortal Hulk.
And I'm going to point out one of the special covers, by the way.
Okay. Of Immortal Hulk?
No, of Spider-Man 75.
Okay.
If you see, there is a hidden gem cover.
Yeah, good luck finding that bad boy.
That is by Ditko. It is so rare, they're not even listing it in DCB service.
Yeah, it's hidden gem variants. 9 times out of 10 go crazy price. I'm just looking at some here on the old eBays because I have it fired up. The first one is a Sinister War Ditko hidden gem variant for $74. And Sinister War, of course, the Spider-Man crossover going now. So they probably found some art that's either hasn't been published or republished or reprinted in ages, and they just sneak them in. Let's see. Next one's a Moon Knight Sienkiewicz 1-100 ratio hidden gem variant, $80. They're not all expensive. Here's a Marvel Snapshot Captain Marvel number 1. Dave Cockrum 1-50 variant. So be nice to your retailer. And if you really, really want it, maybe he can get it for you. It'll be fun to see what it looks like. I know I've been wanting, was it 800 or 700? Where they did the Jack Kirby cover that was never used.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, that's... it was the Ditko cover that was never used because they used the Kirby cover on Amazing Fantasy 15. They rejected the Ditko cover. On whichever one of those it was, they actually used the Ditko cover that had been rejected.
Now, I will point out that Al Ewing apparently is moving over to Venom. So in your very first page, on page 4, you will see Venom number 1 with 500 different variants, including there's one of them hidden gems. Peach Momoko is doing it. Not a Venom fan. However, if he goes as nuts as he did on Immortal Hulk, I may regret not picking up a number 1 of this. So, and this is a all new Venom. So it's not whatever happened in Venom 200 and Extreme Carnage. This is feeding right into it. So if that wasn't enough, they've been joined by industry legend Brian Hitch, who is leaving it all on the page, which sounds vaguely disturbing, but you've been warned. Venom number 1. That's the only comic really that I point out, just because everything else is stuff I order. I do want to have one little micro bitch. Eternals, Darkhold, I'm looking at you. You know, I'm all excited. I want to get in to the storyline. But instead of just doing like a mini series, you're doing a bunch of one shots. Well, that's fine. But then what you do is, if it was a mini series, it'd all be like $3.99, $4.99. No, you bump up the price a buck. You know, and what I want to know is, how many crossovers in this Darkhold are there going to be? You know, I mean, in the Eternals, same thing. There's Eternals Forever number one. Is that even tied into the Eternals book?
What is it, whenever there's a movie that comes out, I notice they go to Ralph Macchio, former editor at Marvel, had written a few things, and have him do sort of a one-shot story that they can market to people who saw the movie. They're not the greatest stories, but they are pretty good introductions. And Ralph Macchio, he was an editor at Marvel for 30 years, so he knows what he wants.
His stuff. Yeah.
He knows what people need in a kind of a, this is an outreach book. So he did a Black Widow one a while back that was okay. He's done others. They're usually just okay. I would never pay full price for them because they're not that great. But they are made as kind of a, oh, you want to know who the Eternals are? Here's a one-shot comic that kind of tells you who they are, shows you what they can do on a page. They read like stories from the 80s. So if you like that sort of story from the 80s, where they would have the, you know, the introduction of characters, they're worth it. For people who buy a lot of comics, wait till it's on Marvel Unlimited.
Well, that's the same thing right across from the page. You got Eternals Celestia. Last month was Eternals Thanos. It's like, okay, is this the regular book?
Yes, those tie in because they're by Karen Gillan.
But why? Why don't you just make
it
part of the numbering? It just sucks. And it really makes me just, it's just stupid. And did you go back to Darkhold?
Eternals isn't selling.
Well, yeah, maybe so, but it's good. And then you go back to Darkhold. Here's Darkhold Blade number one. Darkhold Iron Man number one. Really? Darkhold Iron Man number one? Different creators, different themes. I mean, I bought the last month? The Alpha. But, man, I'm going to have to check out on this because I don't know how many you're doing. I don't know when it ties up. And just like they did with, what was the X-Men one that came out? Giant Size X-Men? You're going to do a trade with
Size X-Men.
Yeah. Forget it. I'm just going to wait for the trade, read it all at once. You did the same thing with Death of Wolverine. Maybe I'm just getting old and this is an old man bitch, but damn it. Give me a goddamn scorecard. I want to know what's going on so I know what to buy, what to ignore, or where you're going with this. It's just crazy because I'll just drop it and forget about it. And then you'll say, well, Eternal's really not selling. And I've enjoyed it. I recommended it. End of bitch. I don't have any other comics I'm buying. Anything in the comic realm that you want to point out, Corey, before we take our jump to the graphic novels?
I do want to point out, they have a new Marvel Tales, which reprints early Ms. Marvel stories, the Kamala Khan stuff. These are $8 books that reprint 3 to 4 comics that are an introduction. And also usually they reprint stuff that is pretty expensive. So this is the all new Marvel Now .1, Ms. Marvel from 2014, number 1 and 2. And Captain Marvel number 17, which was the team up between Ms. Marvel and Captain Marvel.
There are a couple other comics there. Back on page 28, I am looking at Luke Cage, City of Fire, an all-too-relevant story that rocks the Marvel U by Hoche Anderson, Farad Karami for art. When a black man is murdered by a police officer in New York City, Luke Cage is called to action. But what does a good man do when protecting the streets puts him at odds with his own people? 3-issue series. I might wait for a trade. I haven't decided yet. And the page previous is Marvel Voices Community. And I cannot speak Spanish, so I'm not going to insult you by trying to. But Spider-Man, White Tiger, Ghost Rider, so many more heroes get their moment in the sun as new and fan favorite creators continue to expand the world outside your window in Marvel Voices. Let's see. Features an introduction by renowned scholar Frederick Lewis. Oh, I'm sorry, folks. My eyes are really going here. Adama. Sorry. Eldama? I tell you, Corey, it's getting bad. Now I'm going to have to start wearing spectacles when I'm podcasting. Tons of variant covers. I've picked up Marvel Voices usually as I wander through comic shops because I do like to buy something as I visit. And I figure, you know, somebody buying a $10 comic, hey, why not? So I might not pre-order it, but I will pick it up as I am cruising around the various comic shops in the Twin Cities. But the ones I picked up, I've enjoyed. That's why I want to point that out.
And now the Budget Buster.
Dun, dun, dun. All right, let me find my list here. Let's see anything else. On page 98. I have a decision to make. This month in the book is they're soliciting Marvel number 6. I have to decide, am I going to buy this with the trades or do I want to wait for the inevitable omnibus? I love Kurt Busiek's writing. I love the Marvels. But it's also one of those books where the continuity, just like his Astro City, are going to go throughout all the books. And sometimes as I wait month to month, I may skip it. But as you read it as a book, it may be better. Volume 1 of the Marvels is out. The War in Sang Kong trade paperback. If you're not picking this series up, you should. I believe both Corey and I have talked it up. We're positive about it. I just have to decide now, do I want to continue with Marvel 6, which is offered this month, or stop and blow out 1 through 5 on the eBays and just go along with the trades. Or maybe wait and see if they'll ever do an omnibus. Who knows? Decisions, decisions.
I am trying to decide if I am going to buy the Knights of Pendragon omnibus. Knights of Pendragon was the Captain Britain series from the early 90s that was part of Marvel UK, or as we called it when it was coming out, Marvel.
The Oc. What?
Marvel UK. We called it Marvel Oc.
The what? Who? That's Marvel? I'm not buying it.
This was one of the things that I think finally broke the Marvel zombie. There were people in up into the 80s who, one of every Marvel book, but then in the late 80s, early 90s, Marvel just exploded with all these sidelines of books. And one of them was Marvel UK. And I remember people coming in at Shinders and just, a whole new line of books. Just like with New Universe, they just passed it over. Now, this is Dan Abnett and John Tomlinson. Dan Abnett, who went on to do a whole bunch of really good comics. But I've never read these because when it came out, it was like, I can't afford everything. And this is a whole new line. So I'm actually going to be going and reading to see if these are worth getting.
I, my opinion, having had the original series, I wasn't that impressed with them. They're dollar books at best on the eBays. And, you know, I mean, you get a lot in the omnibus. And again, if you've never read it and you're vaguely interested in it, it might be worth it. But I wasn't impressed with any of it. I didn't pick up any of it.
On the next page, New Warriors, Omnibus Volume 2. I loved the New Warriors book.
Oh, I loved it when it came out.
Fabian Nacincha, Derek Robertson. This reprints, let's see, New Warriors 27 through 53, all of the tie-ins. I bought the first volume. Much like a lot of Marvel books at this time, you'll see, wow, that's a lot of pencilers on the book. That's because it would get passed around from person to person to person to person so that it came out on time.
Coming out on time was important during this time.
And New Warriors was a fun superhero book. He used the old, he used the same formula that they used for New X-Men and the New Teen Titans, which is, okay, we take some young heroes, create some young heroes to put with them. There you go. There's your new team. And I'm never going to say that this was a brilliant series along the lines of something by Alan Moore or Grant Morrison. No, it was just fun superhero stuff.
And it was hot at the time.
On the next page is a book I have been looking forward to for years.
Oh, me as well.
The Invaders Omnibus. The Invaders was Roy Thomas saying, you know what? They had the all-winter squad during the 40s at Marvel, which was Captain America, Human Torch, Submariner, with the sidekicks Toro and Bucky. He then added other characters such as Spitfire, Union Jack, a few others along the way. This reprints Giant Size Invaders 1 and 2, because Invaders, much like the X-Men, was going to be a giant size quarterly book. It would come out every quarter as a giant size. But Marvel then said, okay, we're turning everything back into regular, either monthly or bi-monthly books. Invaders was monthly, X-Men was bi-monthly, because Giant Size Invaders 1 and 2 sold much better than the X-Men. Reprints the entire series, 1 through 41, annual number 1, all of the tie-in books, including their first appearance in Avengers number 71, when the Avengers went back to World War II. And while they weren't called the Invaders back then, Roy Thomas did a story where the Avengers fought Captain America, Human Torch, and Submariner back during World War II. It also has the What If, the annuals, and the 1993 miniseries. So it's the whole thing. The hardest thing for me is, do I want the Frank Robbins cover? Because I normally like to get the cover by the original artist. But then there's a Jack Kirby cover. Because Kirby did most of the covers for the Invaders when Roy Thomas could get him to do them.
But I think I'm going
really excited about this one.
I'm going for the Frank Robbins. The Kirby cover doesn't sing to me. If it was something, you know, rather than them fighting where they were coming forward as a team, that might have clinched it for me. But I do like that one, that Frank Robbins. So that's the one I'll be buying, definitely.
They are reprinting Moon Knight Omnibus 1 and coming out with Moon Knight Omnibus 2, which reprints the second half of the original Moon Knight series, as well as his appearances after that. The 6-issue miniseries that was supposed to be a series, but the sales were so poor, they made it into a miniseries and pretty much cemented that, well, Moon Knight's crazy. Because if you read the original Doug Mensch stuff, he wasn't crazy. He had these separate identities because he was a lot like the Shadow. You know, there was who he was. There was Moon Knight. There was his personality as a cab driver, so he could get info off the street, sort of thing. But then in the Fist of Khosnu miniseries, they mean, oh no, he's got multiple personality disorder. He's crazy as a bed bug.
Yeah.
And he's been
and Hank Pym beats people. Sorry, people.
So I'm picking this up. I'm a big Moon Knight fan, and they're doing this because of the Moon Knight series that's going to be going.
Yep, I'm on this one as well.
If you are a fan of the Dark Horse Star Wars stuff and did not buy all of their omnibuses and collections, Marvel's putting it out as well. But on the next page, Young Adventures by Heinberg and Jim Cheung. This has the original Young Avengers, the Children's Crusade series, and the tie-ins to that. I loved this book. And this was a book where they kind of held it for the creator, Alan Heinberg, because he was so good and it was so well done. And they said, all right, we're not going to use these characters until you get done with your TV work and come back. But eventually he contacted Marvel and said, look, TV's just making me too much money. And they went ahead and they did a story by Kieran Gillen to kind of keep the characters in the forefront. And now the characters are part of that Empire crossover last year. Really enjoyed this book. Beautifully drawn, too.
I was thinking they squeeze a couple Masterworks in the middle of the omnibuses, which I always thought was kind of funny.
And the thing is, you know, the Masterworks cost about as much as a small omnibus now, even though they're usually only 400 pages.
Yeah.
Reprint of the Hulk omnibus and a reprint of the Jonathan Hickman Fantastic Four omnibus volume 2. Yeah. I did not buy these when they came out because it's like, oh, I've got all these comics and blah, blah, blah. And now it's years later and it's like, I want them as an omnibus to put next to the Jonathan Hickman Avengers omnibus and Secret Wars because it's all one long story.
I don't know if I bought volume one, but fortunately, all my omnibuses are in one place. So when this podcast is over, I will check. If I haven't, then I have to decide, well, should I buy two and hope I can pick up an inevitable reprinting of number one? Decisions. So I'm down for two omnibuses. I don't think I had any DC ones. I'm still debating the Batman Mutant Ninja Turtle ones. How about you, Corey? How many omnibuses you got this month? The omnibus count.
I don't want to say.
Say. We want to know, Corey.
Okay. Well, with, let's see, I'm getting Batman Superman over at DC. So, New Warriors, Invaders, Moon Knight, Young Avengers, that's four. Fantastic Four by Jonathan Hickman, that's five. Yeah. Six.
Okay, I'm at two, with one on the possibility. So, not a bad month for me.
By the way, if you go over to page 104, there's the new Reign of X that I buy my X-Men as.
Yeah. And a reprinting of, new print of From the Ashes, which was a fun story when it came out. Paul Smith's art, Chris Claremont.
Oh, Paul Smith's art was so good. And I finally found out why he left. Even though his royalty checks on the X-Men were huge. He wanted to draw Doctor Strange, so when Doctor Strange opened up, he moved over there.
Which was fun. I loved him on Doctor Strange.
Our epic collections this month are fucking terrible.
Well, maybe. There's one that could be good if you like the character.
The Avengers Epic Collection Taking Aim is the mid-90s Avengers. And all you have to do is look at that cover and go, yeah. Even though they list George Perez wrote a story. He didn't draw anything in it. This was the Bob Harris god-awful mess Avengers, where he ruined the team so much that they had to do the had to give him over to the Image Boys. And then the Daredevil collection is the D.G. Chichester stuff. Leading up to when he got armor, which, okay, he's got radar sense, so the armor.
That was a good action figure. That was a good action figure. I said that with a straight face. even the next page has got the Deadpool Volume 1.
Yeah.
This is, I believe, pre-fourth wall breaking Deadpool, or maybe when he's just starting to do that.
This is the serious, he's a mercenary Deadpool.
Yeah. So this isn't the fun-loving Deadpool, but this is, you know, the beginning. This is where unless you got a couple $1,000 to pick up a New Mutants 98, you might as well do it this way, and you're going to get a whole lot of appearance reading. You know, this would be the type of stuff, had I not been there for the original, I would probably, you know, pick up just because it's, you know, interesting reading, and I'm being polite. The more interesting reading is on the next page.
Yes. Conan the Epic Collection. This is Conan the Barbarian 43 through 59. It starts the Belit story, which was a story that actually ran for around 50 issues and ended with Conan number 100 as Roy Thomas started telling the stories of Conan and the pirate queen Belit taking over a ship. And beautiful art by John Buscema. This is the good stuff.
Yeah. Next page is Spider-Man Worlds Collide, reprinting the two series, Spider-Man 1 through 5 and Spider-Man, I'm sorry, Spider-Man 1 through 5, Spider-Man 2, 1 through 5. The first one's an actual crossover between universes, between Peter Parker and Miles Morales. The second one, they had already been, I believe, squashed together from Secret Wars. However, yes, there was a few surprises in that one, because who was the Miles Morales that was in the Marvel Universe to begin with? Both series were fun. I had them. I sold them. I'm going to have them again. That's it for me, Marvel-wise, but there's a few other books that, like you said, they're doing the Mighty Marvel Masterworks, which is a fun way to pick up early issues if you've never read them before. Just one, though, this month, right? Just Amazing Spider-Man Volume
2. They only do one a month. And yeah, remember, these are at a smaller size. They're 6x9, so they are the same size as the other books that Scholastic sells. These are mostly for to put on the young adult shelf at bookstores and Target and Walmart.
Which I haven't seen anywhere. So I haven't been to Barnes & Noble lately, so maybe they're there. I'll let you know next time I'm there.
And they're also through the Scholastic Book Fairs. But here's the thing. I just read somebody online posted that they bought one of the Steve Ditko Spider-Man collections. I think it was two when Pocket Books put them out.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, my, they were small.
And gave it to his 9-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
And he thought, you know, the kid's going to read it and go, oh, this stuff is so old. He didn't. He was like, this is so cool. Why Spider-Man didn't used to be cool, and I really like this. So I think Ditko's stuff, we look at it and go, yeah, a lot of people are going to look at it and say it's old because it's 60 years old. But I do think that the power of the stories comes through.
Yep.
I remember even my son when they started putting out the Essentials. I bought him the first Essential Spider-Man. And again, you know, I thought, he's going to read it and go, this is old. But he fell in love with it. And every time there was a new Essential Spider-Man, he wanted me to pick it up until Ditko left the book. And, you know, he wasn't a huge comics kid. When Ditko left the book, he kind of read the Romita stuff, but he quit asking me for the new Spider-Man Essentials. So there's something to those Ditko issues.
Yep. I'll heap on the praise because I, too, was exposed to these Spider-Man via the little trade pocket paperbacks. Absolutely loved them. My kids love the Essentials. And as far as I know, they never really went beyond the Essential Ditko stuff. So, you know, kudos for Marvel for at least keeping it accessible. Anything else Marvel-wise?
Nope. I think that's enough.
All right. I'm going to go off on Dynamite the way Corey goes off on Marvel graphic novels. But why? Dynamite, for me, has become the way Chaos Comics was when I had my shop. I just absolutely not only loved the books, the variants I thought were fun, but just the merchandising they have is just brilliant. I don't see it anywhere. And I can tell you, both my shops, I would take this stuff and I would sell the snot out of their merchandise because nobody else is carrying it, and I would be the only one in town that would. That said, I will offer Corey a quick shot. Is there anything from Dynamite you are interested in?
Not really. They seem to have become just a pure licensing factory.
Oh, yeah. Okay, well, sit back and I'll blitz through this as fast as I can. Corey, you love a good wedding, don't you? You love to cry. Page 149, Vampirella 25, The Wedding of the Century. 21st century, so it could work. Tons of variant covers. It's the last issue of Christopher Priest's 2-year epic. So I only point it out because it is a wedding. On page 154 starts the merchandising I love. There are two of the JFK half dollars that are so much fun. Across from that is the Joseph Michael Linsner Vampirella Black and White Edition bust. If you're a fan of Purgatory, on page 157, she's starting up with a number one with the appropriate amount of variant covers. They also have a nice interview on page 158 with Ray Fox, which is nice. Jennifer Blood, if you remember her, and not many people do, starting up again, tons of miniseries, tons of variant covers. I'm just trying to see. Oh, interview on page 162. On page 165, there's James Bond starting up. I'm not a James Bond fan, but for those of you that are, here's a number one to jump right on. A couple variant covers with that. Next page has, of course, an interview with the creator. And then there is a hardcover on page 167 for you James Bond fans that collect the previous miniseries, James Bond, Agent of Spectre, plus all the other James Bond stuff. So if you do have a James Bond fan in the family, that's the page to go. We'll take a quick pause at page 168 because here is something different that is not a licensing tie-in. It's called Saved by a Whisker by writer Christian Deacon Rybrandt, artist Ken Hauser, who's there. How would you call it? Their house artist. Anytime you see them like with a sketch cover that they're actually doing, he's usually the one that draws it. This apparently is inspired by real life events. It's an all new children's book. So if you're a retailer trying to get, you know, children books up and running, or you're just looking for something interesting and it's got cats, what else could you know? Let's see. It's a true story of a cat who lost his family and the long journey it took to reunite. Check it out. A couple pictures and the stories from a cat perspective. We're going to revisit that theme at almost maybe at the end of the show, but that's just called foreshadowing here. Let's see what else we got here. Page 168. On page 182, you got a ton of boys stuff. There's a boys number one platinum foil edition for $25 that the omnibus covers with the guys from the show, as well as all the trades. So they're still keeping the trades active. Again, if you've never read these, give yourself a treat. Pick up number one. Find out why DC Comics stopped publishing the boys with the first run and Dynamite picked it up. I think it was Dynamite, wasn't it? Or did it go somewhere else first?
I don't know.
All I know is the boys was too much for Vertigo. The final thing is way back on the merchandising. Again, just something I absolutely love. Page 201. I must have blurbed about this earlier because they're offering it again. Elvira, Mistress of the Dark Spectral Switchboard, or as we used to call it. What did we call them as a kid? Parker Brothers had them and they were evil. And below it's a deluxe edition that is limited to 500 signed by Elektra herself. So that's like I said, if I had a comic shop, I would have all these things in. I just love the merchandising that Dynamite's doing. And like I said, I don't want to rave too much, but that's pretty much it for me.
Then next is Boom.
Boom. And again,
I did not have anything from Boom.
Nothing new from Boom. And again, a lot of licensing stuff. Buffy, Firefly, Berserker from Keanu Reeves, which is going really well. I almost forgot. There is one thing from Boom. If you're a fan of Something is Killing the Children, you want to jump to page 209, House of Slaughter number one. This is the inner workings of the House of Slaughter. It's a horror series that expands on the order that forged Erica Slaughter into the monster hunter she is today. It's a brand new series in the world of Something is Killing the Children. So I guess spinoff would be the word. Various covers. No idea if it's going to be as hot as Something is Killing the Children. But this is your chance to delve deeper into that world and find out more about what's going on in that particular universe. As there is no actual issue of Something is Killing the Children. On the next page, you, of course, can pick up on the graphic novels if you haven't and get caught up on that. So that's it for me for Boom. Chug, lug, lug, boom. And now. And the rest here on. I'm not going to sing. I don't want to get sued.
The rest of the catalog.
Yes. Watch it. That's it. That's like, let's get ready to podcast. No, we don't. We got enough legal guys on our ass. Okay. I will. Since I've been talking a lot, I might as well keep talking. Page 242. Flip to it. And you will see on the bottom, Buddy McGill. Corey, I want you to read the description for 242, and you'll know why I recommend buying tons of copies of this.
Let me get there.
242, Advent Comics, right on the bottom.
He's a TSA agent.
Bingo! That's all you need to know.
Party animal, and his name is Buddy McGill.
He's
on the trail of a ruthless terrorist who will not stop until justice is served.
You can't bring that liquid in the airport.
With a case of suds and some brand new duds, he will give you something you can feel.
I'm going high in the thigh, baby. You have a groin anomaly. I don't know. You had me at TSA agent. I was wondering how long this would happen. Ugh. How about you, Corey? What's your first rest?
Page 288 from Binge Books. The Blue Baron. Exploding from the pages of Hero Union, Binge Books proudly presents the sensational solo adventure of the unbeatable Blue Baron. Since 1776, the Blue Baron has battled alien invaders, superpowered psychopaths, and megalomaniacal mutants. But his greatest challenge awaits him inside this groundbreaking, extra-length, standalone epic. I'm buying it because it's drawn by Ron Frenz and Sal Buscema.
Yeah. I mean, come on. That's pretty sweet for $4.99.
68 pages, too.
I am back on page 258. This is one of those, I probably won't buy it, but I am pointing it out in case you're a fan of Fright Night. Fright Night was a movie way back when, what was it, back in the 80s, 85?
Yeah.
This is based on Tom Holland's novel, Fright Night. Essentially a, let's see if I remember the premise, a talk show guy who just does movies and says, I will help you combat evil. Well, these kids think that the neighbor's a vampire. And when they bring him in to do something about it, the host, played by Roddy McDowall, discovers, yes, he is a vampire. And shenanigans occur. It was a Now Comics series that went forever. It was a lot of fun. And American Mythology is bringing it back. If you are at all interested, check it out. There is a series of covers. And like I said, I don't know. Hopefully it's good. And look for the special rare black and white virgin cover. Ooh, now you're talking.
My next one is on page 329. There is a new issue of Hogan's Alley. Hogan's Alley is a very long-running magazine that covers comic strips, and it's been going for more than 23 years, but this is issue 23. They have a long examination of the legendary Frank Frazetta's time working on Lil Abner with a bunch of his artwork. Goes into the Cats and Jammer Kids lawsuit, which meant that there were two, after the lawsuit was done, Cats and Jammer Kids was in two different newspaper syndicates, one as the Cats and Jammer Kids and the other as the Captain and the Kids. Fascinating story about how popular comic strips were. And when the artist left one newspaper and moved the strip to the other, the newspaper said, no, you don't. We own the characters. And he said, no, I own the characters. And it got into copyright ownership and things like that, which is why things get so messy about comic strip royalties and ownership and things like Calvin and Hobbes, where the creator had to renegotiate his contract once it got popular enough because he didn't want them making merchandise after he found out that he didn't have the right to stop them. So this really digs into that stuff. And then it also talks about how they almost made a sitcom in the 50s based on Ernie Bushmiller's Nancy comic strip. I love that sort of thing. I think it's been at least 5 years since a new issue of Hogan's Alley came out.
I thought you said Hogan's Heroes. I was like, doot. Never mind. Do we want to talk about Chilling Adventures Sabrina number 9?
I'm not buying it till it's done.
And I sold my issues 1-8. So, okay, we'll skip that. I'll go to page. I'm just mentioning it's there if you want.
I will. That's how I've become with Archie, because even the Archie, regular Archie series that was by Nick Spencer, the 3 issues of the Katie Keene story, and we haven't seen issue 4, haven't heard anything about it. And
all right.
I don't buy any Archie stuff.
Skip that unless you want to keep your collection going. Page 291. Pop Star Assassin number 1. This is Behemoth Comics. When a mysterious briefcase turns up in his dressing room, Bruce, a coke-addled Elvis impersonator, finds himself wedged between a mob boss out for revenge and a government conspiracy with far-reaching world-ending ramifications, all in an attempt to discover the true identity of his father's killer. It's sex, drugs, rock, and robots, 70s style, in his all-out action comic. It's 1977. The king is dead. Long live the king. And you got variant covers galore. And only $3.99 for that first issue. Let's check it out, baby. Thank you very much.
If you go to page, let's see here, 341. A book I missed the first time out. American Daredevil, Comics, Communism, and the Battles of Lev Gleason. Lev Gleason was a titan among Golden Age comic publishers who fought back against censorship campaigns and the paranoia of the Red Scare. After dropping out of Harvard to fight in France, he moved to New York and eventually made a bid with the groundbreaking titles Daredevil and Crime Does Not Pay. And this goes into his life story and the story of his publications. You'll learn the truth about Gleason's rapid rise to the top of comics, unapologetic progressive activism, and sudden fall from grace.
Page 297, Blue Juice Comics, Billy the Kit. The Wild West has never been wilder. Introducing Billy the Kit, featuring a gunslinging rabbit seeking revenge against the tornado god that killed his family. Why was this sickly, skinny rabbit spared such a gruesome fate? What makes him so special? With the help of Luther the Goat, a profanity spewing martial arts master. I thought I could get through this without laughing, because I was laughing out loud when I first read this. Billy relies on faith, magical firearms, and a kung fu to wage war against the pagan gods and monsters of a bygone era. This is the type of stuff I absolutely live for.
Page 377. Reconstruction, Reminiscing and Rebuilding Puerto Rico. This is a fundraiser for Puerto Rico, which is still suffering from the hurricane that went through 4 years ago.
No, okay. You said hurricane. I call it neglect.
Well, there's that too. 192 pages for $19.99. It's got stories from Gail Simone, Greg Pak, Reginald Hudlin, Dennis Cowan, Tony Daniel, Ken Lashley, Bill Sekovich, Yannick Paquette, Mike Allred, George Jimenez, and more. Celebrities such as Rosario Dawson, Ruben Blades, Javier Muniz, Sonia Manzaro. This has been in the works for a while, and it's just sad that we still are having to fundraise for Puerto Rico, because so many people in the U.S. are like, well, why are we need to help Americans when it's an American territory.
Back on page 307, Charlie's Spot. Chaos. It's a turf war between rival groups for control of the park's best busking spot. Clowns versus bears, jugglers versus dancers, improvers versus hula hoopers. It's up to the spot's former owner, Charlie, to bring peace back to the city. But why is this spot so important to Charlie? It's a good. It sounds like a four-issue series with linked variant covers and extraordinary watercoloring painting by the interior artist Meredith Laxon. Hey, they can't all be superheroes. This is Charlie's spot.
Head over to page 400, the new issue of Back Issue. It's got a Frank Miller Wolverine cover because they are going to cover the 1980s Marvel Limited series. I always loved these when they came out in the 80s. Pretty much any Marvel miniseries I was all over, including Wolfpack. Sorry. But this goes into interviewing the creators behind it, talking about them. I also want to point out from Tomorrow's, the Mike Grell Life is Drawing Without an Eraser book is back in print, as is the American Comic Book Chronicles, the 50s. And the American Comic Book Chronicles, if you want to know about comic book history, these books are indispensable. They go year by year, publisher by publisher, month by month, talking about what was going on in comics that were coming out, as well as behind the scenes, as well as the outside world and how it influenced it. And this volume goes into deep detail on the congressional hearings, the distributor issues, and all of the companies that went under because of them. This was the first comic collapse. Joe,
if you got $250 on page 318 is the Complete Life and Times of Scrooge McDuck Deluxe Edition, a hardcover with slipcase. Absolutely gorgeous. I have had this in various forms throughout the years, and it's all Don Rosa Duck. If you don't have $250, on the other page is for $29.99, Unimpressed by Miranda Takshia. It's Unimpressed combines more than 200 hilarious one-liners with even funnier drawings, tackling modern friendships, romance, urban living, and self-image. Miranda uses her biting sense of humor and background in animation to create brilliant character portraits of women with only markers, post-it notes, and tape. So a couple things from Fantagraphics that caught my eye.
And I think, yeah, the only other thing that jumped out at me that's not a book that I'm already getting was the, well, I'm already getting it, but I'll point it out anyway. And that's in Warrant Publishing, Vampress Carmilla, which is basically Warrant is publishing black and white horror magazines. They're huge fans of the Warren magazines. This has the last artwork by Robert Corbin on the cover. And Don Glut, who wrote a lot of Warren comics, wrote some Marvel stuff with Roy Thomas, makes low budget horror movies, writes most of the stories now for Warrant Publishing. So I enjoy this stuff, and I highly recommend it.
Meanwhile, I'm back in Humanoids on page 330 with Swine. I'm not even going to talk about it. I'm just going to do the reviews. So just Gary Duggan from Savage Avengers / Deadpool. Swine was like getting punched in the face by a comic. The flashback to Jesus would be any other comic's most outrageous moment. I'm not sure it's in the top 10 moments. You can thank me later. Gail Simone says, by page 20, it was already one of the best graphic novels I'd ever read in years. By the end, it was one of my favorite ever of all time. For God's sakes, just buy it. So if you're interested, check out page 330. Swine. On page 337, this is one of those point out things because somebody out there likes Airboy. And finally, what's it been, 30 years? Here comes Airboy number 52. Chuck Dixon's writing it. People I can't pronounce their name are drawing it. A bunch of different covers. This was originally solicited back in March 2020. We all know what happened in 2020. Enough said. So here's your chance to jump on board and get forward if you need yourself some Airboy. On page 359, I'll give you a second to get there. This one is resolicited too from earlier this year. Lewis Trondheim's The Fly hardcover. He tells the exciting life story of a common housefly. From the fly's birth to his inevitable end, we see everything this creature goes through to simply survive from the fly's perspective. We guarantee you'll never look at your kitchen the way the fly does. There's plenty of humor. There's thrills. There's chills. Well, especially when the fly meets the spider. You may never like flies before, but once you meet this little guy, you'll probably be surprised how much you can fly. So this one's resolicited. Just thought I'd point it out again. Page 386. This is a book called Fan Fiction. This is more for you Star Trek fans because this is written by Brent Spiner. He pens an explosive and hilarious novel called Fan Fiction. It's a personal look at the slightly askew view of the relationship between a celebrity and his fans. Set in 1991, just as Star Trek Next Generation caught fire, the young and impressionable actor Brent Spiner receives a mysterious package, a series of disturbing letters. It takes him on a terrifying and bizarre journey that enlists Paramount Security, the LAPD, even the FBI, putting a stop to the danger that has his life and career hanging in the balance. Features a cast of characters, probably never heard of them, Patrick Stewart, LeVar Burton, Gene Roddenberry. It's a completely imagined, but probably things that happened in his real life tale. So it's a hardcover right now. If you want to pick it up, quite possibly at St. Martin Press, they might come out with a trade later on. But it sounds interesting. I remember seeing a little bit. There's a gentleman, I don't know his name, and he had taken quite unauthorized shots of the cast and crew behind the scenes. And everybody was pretty much on board with it. The one I remember is he was talking to Michael Dorn, the guy who played Worf. And they're in the trailers. So the trailers are like side by side. And there's like maybe room for one person to walk it. And Dorn's just kind of fawning on him. All of a sudden, Patrick Stewart out of nowhere. Patrick, or Michael, how many times have I told you to leave this young man alone? He's an important person with things to do. It was hilarious. It was totally personable. I know you'll never find it on the YouTubes because he was told not to let everybody see it. He just let select friends do it. I do remember there was a scene where Brent didn't want to, like, you know, do it, but he said, I'll tell you what, I'll do something you have done to me. Okay, yeah, I really like what you're doing. Would you sign this to my best friend? And would you sign that thank you for everything you've done for me? I wouldn't have gotten where you were. You know, just weird stuff that Brent went through. I do know when I think Paramount found out this guy was doing it, he was almost shit canned off the lot. And it took Patrick Stewart, you know, I told him he could do it. He's doing it for our benefit. It was really just a beautiful thing behind the scenes. But as far as I know, I don't remember who it was that brought this to the shop and shared it. He's kept it private. He's never released it. I know I ran into him a couple years later and he said, yeah, Brent Spiner has thanked me for not, you know, releasing it like everything's released nowadays. And, you know, that was pre-Hot Comics, me owning it. So it was before 1992. So kudos to this guy, but this is probably why this caught my attention here. We're on the end game here. Page 390. If you, I talked about this earlier. I picked up the Zero issue of Extraordinary by V.E. Schwab. Well, here's your chance to get the entire series plus a number zero. Plus, this edition is signed by V.E. Schwab. And again, this is just part of the critically acclaimed Vicious and Vengeful novels. This is only available to comic shops, only available. So you can be cool and for $24.99 get the signed edition, or just go down and get the regular, extraordinary, irregular edition for $24.99. Either way, on sale in October. Let's see. Page 412. Even I got a tail. I lost my thing. From a new series from Vault Comics, Radio Apocalypse, two miniseries, writer Ram 5 or V. Long after the rock out of space struck the world. Okay, I guess they're saying meteor. Hey, dudes, long after the rock out of space struck the world and turned it all to dust, Bakerstown stands the last radio station on the planet. Radio Apocalypse, broadcasting into the unknown, a beacon in the dark for those who wander the lost places. Now changes come into Bakerstown, among them the refugees flocking into an already precarious settlement, an orphan boy caught in an indiscretion, Will Twine. His fate, you know, will twine it with the radio station. In doing so, begin this mixtape of love and heartbreak and intermingable hope. This is a soundtrack to the end of the world. Number one. Now, we're going to venture into the manga section. Remember we were talking about cats earlier? Turn to page 437. The Cosmic Misadventures of Chewie, Captain Marvel's Pet. This is Marvel Meow being published through Viz Media. Join Captain Marvel's pet Chewie as she wreaks havoc in the lives of Marvel's most popular characters. Gain a new perspective on beloved favorites such as Spider-Man and Iron Man, formidable villains including Thanos and Galactus, and anti-heroes like Deadpool, as they all become playthings of this cat creature. This was originally shared on Marvel's official Instagram. These comic strips have been collected with all new content into a gift book. A hardcover for $15, black and white, I guess with some color. So I'm real intrigued. If you're a Marvel fan, definitely check this one out because this was not mentioned anywhere in the Marvel section. All right, Corey, you ready? Flip your book.
We're going into
some toys, baby. I want to mention out something that's really, really cool. Now, we've talked about Mego figures in the past. They're exploding all over the place. Not only are they available at your friendly neighborhood Target, sometimes at Walmart, definitely at your favorite stores, but they are throughout the book. So if you're a Mego fan, like on page 36, you will see there are DC figures, full-size dolls with cloth on 40, 41. Oh, Candyman, Chucky, It. I'm going to get the Young Frankensteins. There's classic Universal monsters. You flip forward. There's a few more on page 45. There's Michael J. Fox's Teen Wolf, Mego, Rocky Creed. So there's the Rocketeer. I've seen the Rocketeer. Really cool figure. Willy Wonka, I may pick that one up. So here's your chance. Either take a chance and hope you'll find them at your favorite store, be it Target or your local comic, or just order them through previews. Let your friendly neighborhood comic shop know that you want them. And they are pretty neat. I can't imagine many people be buying them. Who knows? When we hit our 20th year, we may go, hey, remember way back when you're going to wish you bought that. A couple things I will point out. On page 80, if you're a friend of Daniel Close, no, I said his name wrong. Clowes?
Close.
Okay, so I did say it right. Here is a from his series Death Ray, Andy Black and White Soft Vinyl Doll. This Daniel Clowes has done tons of graphic novels. This one, this particular figure is based on the graphic novel of the same name, which won the Harvey Award for best graphic album of previous published work in 2012. So it's just one of those things that's kind of tucked into nowhere that I think if you're a fan of Daniel, you might want to be aware of. Just like the final thing I'm going to point out, if you're a fan of Buddy Christ, you can get yourself a Buddy Christ 1,000-piece puzzle. It's been previous solicited, so hopefully your comic guy's hip and got it. And if you're thinking Christmas gift, that is something I would greatly enjoy. Or if you got a Scott Pilgrim fan, there's something right across from it. So, yep, you got to score them previews pretty carefully to be able to find all the cool stuff that we like. That was your segue. So you can go to, you also now likes lots of cool stuff and won't make you scour. Oh, it's been a long time since you've been on radio, hasn't it? You know, I tell you what, I'm going to go look at pictures of Marky Post who passed away. You tell them about our sponsor.
Our newest sponsor is NordVPN. Let's be honest, if you're out on the internet, you need a VPN to protect you. There's all sorts of things going on the internet where people can track you. You could accidentally download a keylogger, all sorts of things. NordVPN gives the best security possible. It has a password manager, which generates complex passwords, syncs across all your devices, stores your notes and credit card information. It also gives you 10 gigabytes of private cloud storage, secure files. It backs up your data automatically. But the main thing it gives you is peace of mind. It gives you peace of mind when you're out on the internet, when you're streaming, when you're playing games, when you're listening to podcasts like this one. It gives you safety anywhere at any time. It protects your online activity. You get full access to all content. And if you use the link go.nordvpn.net/SH3KU, it'll take you to where you can get a great deal for a 1 month plan, a 2 year plan, a 1 year plan. They are our newest sponsor. We're happy to have them. And if you would like to sponsor something here at any of the podcasts on the Solitaire Rose Network, you can. Just email me, solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com. Thanks. And I'll also tell them about the other podcasts I do. The Solitaire Rose Radio Network is currently on a pause, basically because COVID-19 has made it so that I have to work a lot of extra hours at both jobs. But you can still go and listen to my other podcasts. Now, you're probably listening to Crazy Comics and Stories, which is the main podcast. But on this same feed, KRAYZCOMIX, is Solitaire Rose Radio, the solo radio podcast that I do. I've done interviews. I've done short stories. I've done all sorts of things. And you can get to it right here on this same feed. I also do a podcast called Novelcast, where I take the novels I've written and turn them into free audiobooks. That's over at novels.solitairerose.com. Dangerous Dan Moore and I, and of course Wolfie B. Bad, give you bad advice over at badadvice.solitairerose.com. You send in your questions, and we give you the aforementioned bad advice. And then myself and Adam Vermillion from For the Love of Comics do the Fantastic Forecast at fantasticforecast.solitairerose.com, where we go through the issues of the Fantastic Four, four issues at a time, to give the plot and commentary on each issue. That's not all. Yes, I'm crazy. I still, over at pwinsiderelite.com, every week on Wednesday, do a recap of the latest episode of AEW Dynamite. I write up what happened, and then myself and Anthony Pyrus will do an audio. Now, you can only listen to the audio if you're a member at pwinsiderelite.com, and if you're a wrestling fan, you should be, where we then break down the episode, talk about what we liked, what we didn't like, give it a grade, and let you know if you should have watched that episode. Those are the other podcasts here at the Solitaire Rose Radio Network. Thanks.
Damn, I knew he would slip that in.
Ugh. And now Joe will tell you about what he's doing on eBay.
Lots of selling. A lot of the stuff we've sold, or I should say I've sold on eBay. I feel like you're doing it with me. We've talked about in the past, so I don't really want to, you know, go in and talk about, well, let's say I sold an issue of Spawn, and I sold the Blockbuster giveaway Detective Comics number 38, which was a reprint from 1995 of the first Robin that appeared in Detective Comics number 38. There were a couple new books that sold. I don't know if we've ever talked about Harvey Hits Comics. It was published by Harvey, 1986 to 87, six issues. And basically, they just, I'm guessing it was reprints. I can't tell if it was new or not. You know, Richie Rich, Little Dot, Little Loda, Wendy, Baby Huey. Did you ever see these, Corey, in the 80s?
I did not.
Well, I mean, They all have, they either have a UPC code or a Join the Fun with Harvey Comics box, just like, you know, when Marvel Comics would replace the UPC code with Spider-Man's head. So apparently they were available in the direct market. I had a few. Don't know where I got them from, but ended up selling them. I think we've talked about this series before. I had a run of The Weird from DC, published in 1988 by some guy, Jim Starlin, Bernie Wrightson. I don't think anything ever became of them. It was a four-issue series that, in 88, just came out of nowhere. This guy, weird things were going on in the apartment of Jason Morgan. Morgan was attempting to form a bridge of sorts into another world, and the efforts go wrong. There's an explosion of light and sound, and all of a sudden this strange energy creature came on. Superman, Guy Gardner, Martian Manhunter, and others try to trap this creature to study it, but the creature is too powerful to contain. Before their helpless eyes, the creature splits into parts and flies off. One enters a computer center. Another flies into a funeral parlor where it seemingly steals a body. And then, strangest of all, the pieces meet again, shape themselves into something weird. A super-powered humanoid, and even Earth's mightiest heroes are powerless to stop it from completing its mission. Corey, I like to ask Corey these things because I know you've read it. Do you even know what the story is behind this? Where did this come from?
And it was used again in Hardcore Station.
Yeah. Yeah, but that was
one of those characters he created, but nobody else at DC liked it. So when Starlin came back to work, I'll bring my character back. And maybe this time they'll use it. Nobody did.
Well, he killed it at issue 4. I mean,
but he came back
the very next day.
And just because a character's killed doesn't mean it can't be used. Yeah. Come on. Ask Tim Drake.
It's probably a lot like Jim Starlin. Hey, can I bring back Thanos? Ooh. Is that even one of ours? So,
well, no,
it's a good series, though. Bernie Wrightson art.
Engelhardt, who wanted to bring back Thanos and was told who. When Starlin came back, he just brought him back. He didn't ask for permission.
As if anybody was paying attention. Now, did they reprint this in a big compendium or something?
I think there was a trade paperback at one point in the 90s.
Yeah, they don't even list it on where I put it. And it's a good series. It's worth going to try to find it. It's not really expensive. I mean, they should be floating around the dollar bins everywhere. Let me fire up the old eBays here.
It showed up in Mystery in Space and a couple of times in the New 52. He was part of Stormwatch. It was reprinted in 2008 in the Mystery in Space Volume 2 trade paperback. So it was never reprinted on its own. It was part of another trade paperback.
Okay. That sounds about good. I don't recall seeing it as I dug through all my trades. But again, to me, reading it, and again, this was way back when, it came out of nowhere. And the weird thing about it was at the end of issue 4, the character died. And then when he came back later, I was like, I know who this is. So, but I had my original run, and like I said, it didn't quite make the cut. Sold a couple variant covers from Rising Stars. This was published by Image 1999 from 2005. Michael Straczynski through Top Cow. I don't know if this was going to be a series, like a TV show or what, but it was. It asks the difficult questions about a world with superpowered beings. How would they learn to cope with their powers? How would they really interact with each other? And how would the rest of society cope with these powerful beings? Whoever wrote this says it's a lot in the tradition of Astro City and The Watchmen. As I flip down to the end, let's see, there were 24 issues with a year gap between 23 and 24, which could explain why when I had Crazy Comics, I was able to get issue number 24 in the shop and nothing else. Like different variant covers, different dynamic versus exclusives. 1, 2, 3, 4 books, 5 books, a deluxe set. So might be worth picked up. I've never really read it, come to think of all the collecting I did. My daughter gave me a couple issues of Snot Girl. This is was published by Image from 2016 to 2019. She picked up the graphic novel, and I did read it. It's enjoyable. It's kind of outdated. I think I'm having a deja vu moment because I think I talked about it before because she talks Snot Girl was the blog, whatever. Anyways, the issues kind of dropped with issue 15. There's two books only going to number 10. So no idea if they're ever coming back to that. So just a lot of different things. A lot of stuff's been selling. We're not going to really talk a lot about Free Comic Book Day much, but by the time we do next week, the stuff I'm not keeping that I picked up through the dollar bins and all the other fun stuff will be on the eBays. I've got stuff for the con. I've got stuff on consignment. So, again, you know where to go. Crazy, K-R-A-Y-Z. As a fan of the show, if you buy something, just send me a note. Let me know. I'll toss in something fun to go along with it. If you see something that's priced crazily, make an offer or just say, hey, could you give me a deal? I love listening to the podcast. Hell, you don't have to say you love listening to podcasts. Just say you listen to the podcast. How was it with Howard Stern? People who love the show listen for 2 hours. People who hate him listen for the entire show. So somewhere out there, we got people that hate us, and they listen every single agonizing minute. Suffer. The rest of you, come on over to my eBay store. Come get some.
And now we get to my favorite part of the show. No, not where I talk about all of the Japanese girl bunny figures in previews.
Oh, I thought you were going to be turning Japanese.
They always seem to have cute girls wearing bunny ears as action figures in previews. No, it's Freakin' a Geeky Joe. What are you freaking on?
I wonder if those things sell. Oh, well.
Obviously, or they wouldn't keep making them.
This is going to be kind of a weird freaking geeking type thing. One of our friends, Lisa Edmondson, came along with us on Free Comic Book Day. She is preparing the vast collection that her and my old buddy Mike, I don't know what you say, it's their collection. She's just getting it ready because she's got a table coming up at FallCon. XL. What the hell is XL? Why am I good at this? Is that 31? No. 11? I don't know what. Maybe it means extra large because I know they've been going well beyond 11 years. FallCon, the One Day Wonder, supersized. Okay, that's what it is. FallCon XL, September 25th. That's a Saturday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. $12. Pre-sale until September 1st, 15 at the door, kids 9 and under free. Dealer tables almost sold out. Retailer tables, I shouldn't say retailers, creator tables almost sold out because this year they're actually selling tables to creators. It'll be at the Minnesota State Fairgrounds Grandstand. More information available online, MidwestComicBookFans.com. So they're banging that sucker up. Lisa is actually going through all of the stuff her and Mike accumulated and pricing it out. And I went over the other day to help her out because it's overwhelming to her. You know, she'll get into an area and just, oh, my gosh, find something that she bought for Mike. It's very, very emotional. And I had an emotional moment that cut me, kind of shook me. I wasn't ready for. I was, you know, moving. I'm helping her trying to price out toys while she's digging through trying to get out pops because her big thing is she's going to have tons of really cool pops. I'm trying to help with the toys. I ran across a copy of Amazing Spider-Man number 200. Corey, tell the folks what issue I started buying Amazing Spider-Man at.
Was it at 178?
You are correct. This copy had my handwriting on it. A lot of things that Mike and Lisa bought, well, Mike more so, he bought for me through the 10 plus years he had a comic store, or I had a comic store. He was, you know, obviously one of my better employees. So I'm running across things with my price on it. This comic, Amazing Spider-Man 200, is the original one I bought, probably from Greg Ketter's store. I don't even remember the year this thing came out. I'm going to open this sucker up. Oh my God. I'm 1979. So not far from when I started. Somehow the fates have designed. This is the original Spider-Man number 200 I bought. I brought to cons. I sold. Mike bought it. Lisa gave it to me. And it's come back into my hands. And I am trying right now not to choke up. But I am just... I'm freaked is what I'm at. And you can't get freakier than that. And I thank Lisa. She's being very generous. You know, like, wait, if you see something you want, let me know. And I'm like, no, I want to help you out, price this stuff out. I am so excited to see what she finally brings to FallCon. And like I said, I was over there for 4 hours. I helped her price some stuff. I'm going to go back, try to keep it going. Statues, pop figures, toys, and I don't know what other goodies she's going to run across. So definitely get ready for FallCon. I will be there as well doing the charity booth. And again, tomorrow I'm going to start going through the garage and see what we have left. This is where I plead for everybody out there. It's been a year. I don't know when the last con was. It's been maybe 2 years. I don't have anything ready for the charity booth because I haven't been buying things. And, you know, we've had some gracious donations come in. If you've got anything out there in podcasting land that you want to donate, get in touch with me direct. Let me know or get a hold of Corey. Corey will forward you to me. Everything goes to charity. We have a lot of fun with it. You can take a tax write-off because I think the way it works is you either look it up like on TurboTax or one of those sites that say, yeah, this is what it's worth. If you got the receipts, you know that, hey, I paid cover price for it. You take it off as cover price on your taxes. I'm looking for things you don't want. Things that I can flip and that we can use to give to charity. You know, there was a couple of books we talked about in the previews that are going for good causes. That's what this is going for. It's all going on at FallCon. So if you can get a hold of me somehow and you got something, if you're in the Twin Cities area, I'll come get it. If you're out state, we'll talk. If you want to mail it to me, we'll figure something out. If that's not enough, Twin Cities Con will be happening October 2nd and 3rd at the Minneapolis Convention Center. Guests are lining up real fast. I know Peter David's going to be there. But again, go to www.twincitiescon.com to hear about these guys and to check up and to get discounts. If that's not enough, October 22nd, 24th, down at the Mayo Civic Center in Rochester, Minnesota, will be Nerding Out Con 3. This is an incredible thing because they're going to have tons of people there. I'm just looking at some of the people. Scott Steiner is going to be there. Jason Mewes. I can't think of the actor who plays Dante on Clerks. He's going to be there. Admiral Akbar. Oh, I'll get his autograph. Now, what I was thinking is, you know, I'm kind of a Power Ranger fan, the original ones. I mean, I had fun with it. The kids watch it. We collected toys. Had I been paying attention, you know, Mind's Eye had the Blue Ranger in the shop a couple months ago. At Twin Cities Con will be Austin St. John. He's the Red Ranger. The Black Ranger, and I can't find his name because my computer froze. He's going to be at Nerding Out Con. And I know the White Ranger's already come through town. All that's missing is I need to get the Pink Ranger somewhere. Because as you know, the actress who played the Yellow Power Ranger, the original one, she passed away tragically. So, yep, everything's coming up Power Rangers. So that's my freaking. Corey, what you freaking on?
By the time I got done with my shift on Sunday, I realized I had not been home except to sleep or work while I'm at home since Wednesday morning. I had worked the shift at the office job on Wednesday, then did the wrestling coverage, then Thursday, worked a 10-hour shift, drove to the group home, did a sleep shift there, came home, worked the office job, went to the group home, got back home, covered the first episode of AEW Rampage, woke up, went over to your house for free comic book day, came home, slept, was up at 5 in the morning to be at the damn group home, and was there until 2 in the afternoon. I gotta quit doing this. By the time I got home Sunday, I sat down on the couch and it's like, oh, I need to do blah, 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 blah. I didn't do anything. I had nothing left in the tank. And every so often, you know, I will say to myself, you know, I used to do so much more than this. And then I remind myself, yeah, but you were in your 20s. I got to quit overscheduling myself. Like I said earlier in the show, today the group home called and it's like, can you come in tonight? And if not for the podcast, I probably would have said yes because I'm stupid. But the good thing was I was already scheduled at the office job till 7 and they only needed me till 8:30. I am not at the group home at all this week until Saturday morning when I'm only doing a 5-hour shift because I really need some time away. And comic-wise, there's not a lot I am freaking about other than it really feels like this upcoming distribution change is going to hit comic shops kind of hard. So once again, when you go to your local comic shop, pick up an extra trade paperback, pick up a couple issues of a comic you haven't tried, dig up a few back issues, help them out because things are kind of messy for them. And with this new Delta variant, with the COVID, Illinois is starting to talk about they may have to close down because their hospitals are full. If you go down south, all the ICUs are full. Here in Minnesota, we're not getting that bad an outbreak because we're smart and have been getting vaccinated. But the grocery stores and the gas stations have their signs up asking people to mask again. They're not saying they're required, but they're strongly recommended. The Delta variant doesn't worry me as much as what's coming after because people aren't getting vaccinated. The virus that survives mutates and is stronger. So in one or two more generations of this virus, it will be where the vaccine doesn't work on it anymore. Thankfully, the people who put together the first vaccine are working on a new one already because they're scientists. They know how this stuff happens. But it's starting to look like this is turning from a pandemic to an endemic, which means it will always be around. Joe, what are you geeking on?
I'm going to start a new segment.
Another
Adventures,
one?
Yep, Adventures in a Decommissioned Cop Car.
Oh, God.
I know. Before, guys... I've always said I may be a rider, but I'm a terrible passenger. And I was shoved in the back of Lisa's car with Wolfie, so it wasn't totally bad. But you know, everybody. You've heard me. You know, I'd like to swear at other people on the road, but it's like, hey, my cop car would catch up. Basically, my dad gave me a decommissioned cop car. It looks like a cop car. It's black. It's got a spotlight. It's got nothing cop related on it. But that doesn't stop people from reacting to it. I did feel bad. I was sitting in an alley waiting to take a left, and a young black kid came by in his car, and he looked over and looked a little panicked, obviously. As I turned, you know, because he was just going the way I was going, he suddenly took a quick right and disappeared. And all I was thinking to myself is, first of all, I felt bad because I scared him. But second, you know, you take a fast turn, you didn't use your signal. That's probably a great way to attract a real cop. So just don't, you know. There are other people that I'm less sympathetic towards, such as when I was driving on the way home and a car came pulling up behind me and it was a Lexus. And the guy basically just stayed even with me behind me until we got to the light, and then he pulled up next to me, and then he realized, oh, I'm not a cop. So then at the light, he tore off. Interesting thing about cop cars, they have a turbo in them. I understand how cops now can suddenly appear out of nowhere in your rearview mirror. Well, I just kept pace with the guy, even though he was doing his best. Why do I say that? Because he was doing about 60. I look at the speed limit. We're in a 40 zone. I slowed down and let him speed on. I also prayed to God I would never, never do anything bad again if he is pulled over by a real cop as soon as I come around the next corner. Never happened. I did see another decommissioned cop car around the neighborhood. This one was weird because I pulled up and I thought it was a cop because he had light bar on the top. And I kind of felt bad for the person in the middle because this person, the guy in the decommissioned cop car, as he turned, I could see on the side where it said sheriff. And they obviously just peeled the letter off. Didn't look like he had anything else in his car, you know, because usually you can tell, even with dark windows, if they have things in the windows, you know, radar guns, extra lights, whatever. All I know is the guy that was between us probably crapped a brick because he's in front of a guy who's a cop car and I pull up behind him. Oh, well, the other guy went right for other guy went the guy between us went straight. I went right or did left, went home, whatever. I did feel bad because as I pulled up to an Arby's to pick up dinner after I was working over at Lisa's, all of a sudden the people in the window go, oh, the people in front paid for your dinner. And I'm like, oh, but, okay, I just shut up. I don't want to, I'm not a cop. Don't, whatever. I look like I might have been. I was wearing a blue shirt. I had glasses, my hat. All I know is the next time I see a peace officer, I will buy him dinner and tell him this story. I do know that the cops do notice that I'm an ex-cop car because today as I was going to the post office to drop off my eBay stuff, there was the slowest funeral procession ever in front of me. I mean, they were going like maybe 5 miles an hour, which is weird because it was on a side street and you would think they would go a little quicker, but whatever. And just as I was just behind and just, you know, whatever, I don't have to worry about the car overheating like I would my truck. As a cop turned the corner, I kind of look at him and he's really interested in what the, but I'm not a cop. Yeah. I don't know if he thought I was like the marker for the end of the funeral procession or whatever, but so as more fun happens, or at least until the car finally gets gutted by someone who thinks it's a real cop car, that is today's episode of Adventures in a Decommissioned Cop Car. As far as other things I'm geeking out, my wife and I are finishing Harry Potter. As you know, we started watching it while we were in Reno. By finishing it, I mean watching the first two, because we watched half of the first one and none of the second one because we missed it. It was like running in sci-fi. And at the end of the night, after we were done drinking or geeking or whatever we were doing, we would just sit back and watch until we fell asleep. And it was fun because we had just finished watching the end of the Deathly Hallows, where all the main kids had grown into young adults. And now you're back to where they're kids again. And you're like, wow, that's pretty cool. What I'm really geeking on is tomorrow. I've got my box day, which showed up on Thursday, which I haven't opened. I've got my last Kickstarter from Coffin Comics with Lady Death stuff. And they just have a new one that just broke. I've got stuff that I bought off the eBays that have arrived. I've got all the stuff that I picked up from Free Comic Book Day, including, how would you say? I picked up 4 omnibuses. I got Deadly Hands of Kung Fu. I think this is volume 2.
Yes.
This is the one that's the, is there a volume 1 that had the magazines in it?
Deadly Hands of Kung Fu is the magazine. Okay. Master of Kung Fu is the comic.
Okay, so I've got volume 2. I got to pick up volume 1 if I ever find it. And these are the magazines I've never read. I had Corey confirm just in case. I picked up the, I can't read. Oh, Tales of Suspense, Marvel Masters of Suspense. This is the Steve Ditko horror stuff pre Spider-Man, or did he do horror stuff while Spider-Man?
No, it's pre-hero stuff.
Cool. I picked up Marvel Monsters Volume 2, which I had picked up Volume 1 at the last comic show. And then I picked up the Black Widow Strikes, which I believe has all the appearance of Black Widow up until whenever. So, and I did that mostly because I haven't gotten any omnibuses lately. Nobody loves me. Oh, well, but I got all that to do tomorrow. Corey, what you geeking on?
I have been reading a few comic books here and there. First one I have read is Batman 89, which is the Batman comic set in the Batman movie universe, the Tim Burton Batman movie universe. It is written by Sam Hamm, who wrote the first Batman movie. It is set after the second one, Batman Returns, and is drawn by Joe Quinones. And he also inked it. Really good setup, and is setting up for Harvey Dent to become Two-Face, which we all expected when we saw that Lando Calrissian was going to be Harvey Dent, but they never did that story. Well, now they're doing it. Marvel-wise, what did I read at Marvel? Hold on, let me go down to where the Marvel books are. Da, 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 da. Let's see, Defenders number 1. This is by Al Ewing, who does a lot of the Marvel Cosmic stuff and did the Immortal Hulk. He is doing a mini-series of the Defenders. This is, the Defenders are called together. And again, this digs into the fact that the Defenders are a team that really doesn't want to be together. Doctor Strange reluctantly calls on a number of heroes to fight a pretty terrible menace. And as I told Joe, one of our things that we've talked about is that way back in the 70s, the universe was destroyed and only Doctor Strange survived and then was completely recreated. And he's the only one who knows it happened. Well, they've been saying in some of the other Marvel books that this is the seventh iteration of the Marvel Universe, with the fifth being the pre-Doctor Strange sees everything destroyed. After that is the sixth, and then Secret Wars, after Secret Wars is the seventh. They are digging into the previous four universes. Wrestling wise, the first episode of AEW Rampage was Friday night. It was three title matches. It was an hour long show. And because it was an hour long, there was no fat. All three matches were awesome. And they started off with a world title change. Now, Joe, when I say that AEW's first episode of their new show had a world title change, would you be shocked if I said it was the Impact and TNA world titles?
I'm intrigued, but not shocked.
Well, Kenny Omega was the Impact world champion, the TNA world champion, the AEW world champion, and in Mexico, the AAA world champion. He lost the Impact title, which is with the TNA title, to Christian Cage. And next week is... Well, it will have happened after this drops, but Friday is what they are calling First Dance. And the way they have dropped so many hints, if CM Punk does not show up on that episode, the audience will burn the building down. You know, they are doing all sorts of things, such as Darby Allin saying he's going there to face the best in the world. It's called First Dance because it ties into the Last Dance thing that they did with Michael Jordan, and things that CM Punk has been seeing on his Twitter. We've got rumors that Daniel Bryan has already signed a deal and he will be coming in next month. AEW is getting very exciting and very interesting very fast. And as a wrestling fan, it makes me excited because WWE actually has competition now. And then the last thing I am pointing out, Joe, do you know who Alan Dean Foster is?
I believe the way I remember him is he wrote some of my favorite movie adaptations for Star Trek and Star Wars and Aliens. You know, whatever it was, his name was inevitably on it.
He is still with us. He has a new book out that you can only get from CentipedePress.com called The Director Should Have Shot You, Memoirs of the Film Trade.
Ooh.
Foster comes into any project with experience, professionalism, and a certain directness that makes him a reader's favorite and occasionally a director's chagrin. Like the time Alan tried to fix Alien 3 only to be told, no thank you. The time that a vice president at Universal Studios banned Foster from any dealings with the Chronicles of Riddick when the film star invoked his name in a debate with the director over reshoots and fixing the script. Oh, and there was that time Alan saw the first ever screening of Star Wars with Alice Cooper. Yes, that Alice Cooper. This is a limited book. All of the 500 signed copies are sold, but the 1,000 unsigned copies are unsold. I found out about it earlier today and ordered it. He goes into...
Where? Title. I got to order this.
CentipedePress.com. And he tells the story...
Alan Dean Foster's... new book. It's Google's giving me nothing.
Put Alan Dean Foster, Director Should Have Shot You.
All right.
He goes into the story behind his adaptations of the Star Trek TV, the animated series, Star Wars, Alien, Clash of the Titans, Chronicles of Riddick, and so on and so on and so on. Really looking forward to this. Love Alan Dean Foster stuff. And as a kid, even into a teenager, if he wrote an adaptation of a book, of a movie, I would buy it even if I'd seen the movie, because he would always bring more to it. He would clean up the plot holes. He would fix any of the narrative issues. And he even goes into Splinter of the Mind's Eye with new information that we have not had before.
I would have bought the signed.
Yeah, so would I.
Yeah. But it was real easy. Centipede Press, right there on the upper left. It was like the first book I saw. I ordered mine. Yay.
Believe it or not, kids, you've listened to us blather on about comic books for 2.5 hours. And as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic that you like the most, Joe.
It's not all good news. The other day, a judge found Alan Dean Foster guilty of using too many commas. I'm expecting to see a very long sentence. That's what I live for. I feel like dancing. Somebody hit my music.
Done, bitches!